Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the thrice weekly Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thank you for queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show today. This story was first published on April 24th of 2011 under the headline Gallon House Covered Bridge, Ground Zero in Battle Over Booze. Here we go. If Oregon had ever had its very own civil war, it probably would have been over a bottle of scotch, and it probably would have broken out at the Gallon House Bridge in Marion County. The Gallon House was a covered bridge about halfway between Silverton and Mount Angel in the heart of the Willamette Valley, and when it was first built, the entire state of Oregon was dry, or rather it was supposed to be. A state law, promoted by Governor Oswald West, a teetotaling progressive with a friendly state legislature at his disposal, wrote into the state constitution that the, quote, manufacture, sale, or advertisement of intoxicating liquor would henceforth be verboten. In Silverton, the Protestant majority heartily approved, and a powerful temperance organization, the Good Templars, threw its weight behind the state law as well. But Mount Angel? Not that kind of town. Founded by families from South Germany and Switzerland, it was as overwhelmingly Catholic as Silverton was overwhelmingly Protestant. Catholics, of course, took seriously the biblical injunction to take wine with communion. They weren't going to, as they saw it, take Oz West's word over that of Jesus Christ. In this, they were joined by lots of non-Catholics who liked to drink once in a while and didn't appreciate the governor telling them they couldn't have one. So in much the same way that neighbors give each other packages of frozen Lockerbie stamped not to be sold, folks got around the law by giving each other spirits, hiding the money transfer that made it a sale rather than a gift. Although this was in utter violation of the spirit of the state law, it was perfectly legal, so long as nobody wrote out a receipt or if the receipt was for the bottle rather than its contents. This sort of thing would not wash in Silverton, where the municipal code got brave, where the state law got shy, but in Mount Angel it worked fine. And so, Mount Angel bottle and jug merchants did a brisk trade taking care of thirsty visitors from Silverton. Most of these didn't make the 5-mile journey all the way to Mount Angel, though. Instead, they'd slip out of town on a back road that few traveled and go about 2 miles out of town to the Gallon House Bridge, a brand new, at the time, covered bridge across Abiqua Creek. On the Mount Angel side of the creek was a little shack, the Gallon House, at which the thirsty visitor could pick up a bottle or jug or fruit jar to add to his collection, you know, once you had emptied out the booze that just happened to be inside of it. Naturally, this caused some tension between the civic leaders of the two towns, although I haven't heard of any serious incidents having resulted. Perhaps that's because the federal government stepped in a few years later with the Volstead Act, putting the entire country under prohibition and driving the whole liquor trade in both towns underground. This amusing little story says a lot about Oregon's odd relationship with alcohol since its founding. The state was home to the first brewery west of the Mississippi River, Blitz Weinhard Brewery in Oregon, established 1856. But downtown Portland restaurants seem to have eventually gotten a bit too diligent about supporting their local brewery. As the story goes, a half century later in 1912, Portland industrialist Simon Benson started noticing his workers coming back from lunch slightly drunk because there's nothing non-alcoholic available in downtown Portland for them to drink. Benson, when he learned about the problem, invested $10,000 to have water fountains installed all over Portland, and these are the famous Benson Bubbler fountains, which are still in service today. There were other issues, too. Not the least of which was the fact that right up until about 1910, it was very dangerous to get drunk in the presence of strangers in certain waterfront watering holes. You were likely to wake up with a lump on your head and a brand new job as a merchant mariner, headed across the Pacific on a sailing ship to whose captain you had been delivered unconscious and wrapped in a tarp the night before by that friendly stranger who was buying you drinks. Perhaps that's why West and his fellow prohibitionists found the state so amenable to outlawing beer and liquor a couple years later. All the really hard drinkers had lost fingers in a drunken sawmill accident, gotten deported by the Shanghai gangs, or met some other similarly horrific fate. No one was left to vote no. I say this with tongue firmly in cheek, of course, but it is certainly possible that people at least took these abuses into consideration when deciding whether to support the governor's plan. Today, Oregon is widely thought of as the microbrewing movement's home state. By 1994, there was more brewing activity per person in Portland than anywhere else in the country, even Milwaukee and St. Louis, although that may have changed since Blitz Weinhard was sold and moved its operations out of town. Even so, it's been a while since anyone's been shanghaied out of a waterfront bar or forced to choose between dehydration and drunkenness on the job, so it looks like when it comes to spirits, Oregon has finally found a good balance. Key sources in this story have included works by James Andrew Long, Ralph Friedman, and Lee H. Nelson. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do. Visuals that go with today's show can be found at offbeatoregon.com, where you will also find full citations to the sources for this story. The podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Got an idea for a show I should do or just want to say hi? Drop me a line at fj@offbeatoregon.com or ping me on Twitter at @offbeatoregon or send a message through the Facebook page at facebook.com/oregon.1859. Also, do let me know if you're ever going to be in Corvallis with time for a cup of coffee or a pint of Hammerhead and an inclination to talk about Oregon history. Fresh episodes of Offbeat Oregon History come your way around 6 a.m. every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning. So if you're looking forward to the next one, well, you haven't got long to wait. Until then, go fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.